You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Good morning. I'm Cardinal Francis George. For the next hour, the Archdiocese of Chicago will be hosting discussions on issues, people, and associations that touch our lives. Welcome to the Catholic Community of Faith.
Good morning. Welcome to Catholic Community of Faith and Relevant Radio 950 AM. I'm Father Greg Sackwitz, pastor of St. Mary Parish in Evanston, and co-hosting today, Graziano Marcheschi. Let me read this. Director of Ministerial Resource Development for the Archdiocese of Chicago. Graz, I will one day get your title down, but the name part is easy.
Yeah, well, but that's going to be the least of your challenges today because you're going to have a lot of Italian words to have to speak this morning.
Today will be challenging with a lot of Italian names, like you're saying. And today is the Feast of the Annunciation. So it's hard to believe that 3 months ago today was Christmas Day. Now, March 25th, the Feast of the Annunciation, and meat is allowed today on the feast day. So if you have meat, it's perfectly okay on the Feast of the Annunciation. Also,
let it be done to me according to your will.
That is correct.
Words to live by.
Also, when you're coming down here this morning, it's rather cold out there.
Yeah.
It doesn't. But here's the thing. Spring starts March 20th, March 21st. It's still winter-like. We're still in March. But at least there's light at the end of the tunnel, and I think it's going to be a couple of years from now, around now.
A couple of years from now before we
will
get
be Easter.
Spring?
Oh. It'll be Easter. I think in 2013 will be the last week of March. So we have a wonderful show lined up, and our phone number is 312-255-8408, 312-255-8408 on Relevant Radio 950, Catholic Community Faith, and time is exactly 9:02. The Center for World Catholicism and Intercultural Theology at DePaul University is hosting World Catholicism Week 2011. There will be events held from April 11th through April 14th, and one of the main events in Chicago will be a celebration of the life of Blessed Chiara Luce Badano. How was that?
Oh, that was great, Greg. Yeah,
not bad.
I'm impressed.
A Focolare member and the first teenager of the 21st century to be beatified. Our guest in studio, Tom Masters, co-author of Focolare, Living a Spirituality of Unity in the United States. Tom met the Focolare community in Chicago back in 1975 and has been a member of the men's Focolare house there since 1988. He is editorial director of New City Press. Tom, welcome to Catholic Community of Faith.
Thank you, Father Craig.
We also have with us in studio Adam Kelly, and we are waiting for Gina Citron. She's stuck in traffic somewhere. Adam, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
And maybe as a way to begin, Tom, for our listeners who do not have a clue, what is the Focolare movement and how did you get involved?
Well, the Focolare movement is a group of people, Catholics primarily, but people of all Christian faiths, even people from other faiths, who see that the focus of their life is God, who is love. And that insight came from the experience of a woman named Chiara Lubick, who died just about 3 years ago. March 14th was her anniversary. And during World War II, she was living in Trent, Italy, her hometown. And Trent, a city which is in the Dolomite Mountains and a pass up to the north, was heavily bombed by the Allies during World War II. And Chiara Lubick, who was in her 20s at the time, and other young women, good Catholic girls, were living this experience of seeing everything that they loved and cherished being destroyed. Their homes were destroyed, their families were dispersed, their relationships were disrupted, the schools were shut down. And in the light of that experience, they asked themselves, well, what is there that no bomb can destroy? And what they realized, reading the Gospels and the bomb shelters, was the one thing that couldn't be taken away from them was their relationship with God, and the God is love. And out of that experience came a way of life, a gospel-based way of life, where Scripture is not something to be analyzed, although we do need to analyze Scripture. But Scripture is something that needs to be lived. And as they read the Scripture and lived it out, a whole way of life came about, first among a small community there in Trent, and then after the war it began to spread through Italy, then throughout Europe. And then in the 60s, it began to spread worldwide. The first members of the Focolare came to the United States in 1961. So this is our 50th anniversary here in North America.
It's amazing how a grassroots movement like that becomes a fire that just spreads across the globe. There have been a number of those, you know, in the last century that happened.
Yes.
A couple of them that started in Italy. Mm-hmm. The Saint Egidio community is one that I'm also aware of. What do you think? Talk about it from both the very practical human level, as well as from the spiritual grace level. Obviously, it was the will of God and the work of the Spirit that this spread.
Right.
But on a practical human level, what happened? I mean, what did Chiara Lubich do that enabled her enthusiasm and her passion to spread to so many other people?
Yeah, that's a great question, and in fact, that's the question everybody asks. Well, what do you do? You know, and some organizations, some groups, some movements, like Saint Egidio, they really work for world peace. They work with in conflict zones in the world. The Paulists publish books and work in communication. What does the Focolare do? Well, I'll start with the spiritual side. One of the phrases in the gospel that they read, Chiara Lubich and her friends read, that really struck me, said, this is what we're really meant to live for. And they were reading the gospel of John, and they saw that final priestly prayer of Jesus where he says, Father, that all may be one as you and I are one. And they said, they didn't really understand what that meant, but that's what they were meant to do. And some of they felt that. And as they continued to read, they realized that there were really two aspects of living for unity. And one of those aspects was this presence of Jesus in their midst. You know, again, in Matthew we read, where two or three are gathered in my name, there am I in their midst. And they really felt that presence. This was before Vatican II. Now this presence of Christ in the community is something that's better understood or better experienced now. And the other practical thing that they, there's a spiritual thing that the realest insight they came was, at one point, one of the young women was quite sick, and a priest had brought her communion. And after the priest had given communion, he asked Chiara Lubich, said, when do you think it was that Jesus suffered most? And she said, I suppose in the Garden of Olives, he sweat blood, you know. And he said, no, I think it was that moment on the cross where he said, my God, why have you forsaken me? And it hit Chiara. You know, she said, if that's the moment that he suffered most, that's the moment we have to love most. And so they began to see that presence of Jesus in his forsakenness around them. And they saw him in every experience of suffering in the world. So practically, what does that mean? Well, that means that you've experienced this joy of Jesus in your midst, but you look for these experiences where you can enter into the experience of suffering, especially the suffering of others, and then find, because when you recognize who that is, you know, when you see a neighbor who is suffering, that's Jesus. And if Jesus is joy, love, peace, that, so what you do is you bring the grace of God into everyday life, especially.
See, I think that's the key
moments.
Time. It becomes part of everyday life.
Yes.
It's not Jesus, the other out there, but somehow in our midst, with us at this moment, and how we care and love for each other. You are listening to Catholic Community Faith on Relevant Radio, 9:50 a.m. I'm Father Greg Sackwitz, along with Grazia Marcheschi, and our guests are Tom Masters, Adam Kelly, and Gina Citron did show up. We'll get Adam and Gina in the conversation after the break. 312-255-8408. We'll be back right after a break.
The Bank of America Chicago Marathon, taking place on Sunday, October 9th, is sold out, but Team Catholic Charities has post-close entries. By joining Team Catholic Charities, you'll be running to help our neighbors in need of food, clothing, and shelter, necessities for everyday survival. To join or sponsor the Catholic Charities Marathon team or committee, call 312-655-7912. That's 312-655-7912. Visit us at catholiccharities.net/Chicago Marathon. We'll see you at the finish line.
The cemetery ministry is a core ministry of our Catholic faith tied to the corporal works of mercy. Cardinal George says, "It's comforting to know that our Catholic cemeteries are caring for the remains of our loved ones awaiting the resurrection." There are 43 Archdiocese of Chicago cemeteries willing to help you during times of loss. Call 708-449-6100 for assistance. Catholic cemeteries, serving the Catholic community since 1837.
Real men answer the call to the priesthood. Is God calling you?
You know, I'm honored to be a priest for the Archdiocese of Chicago. I think it's great.
There's a desire to want to give back and to help and to serve those who are especially in need.
I think there's a wonderful opportunity for us to bring good news to a world that's very much in need.
When I experience through my ministry someone being brought closer to the Lord, it's an exciting, thrilling moment.
If you feel God's call to a priestly vocation, contact us at 312-751-8298 or visit our website at chicagopriest.com. John Paul II once said, "Do not be afraid. Open your heart to Christ. The deepest joy there is in life is the joy that comes from God. Jesus is the hope of the world. The people are calling. The world is calling. God is calling. Answer the call to the priesthood."
Welcome back to the Church of the Cardinal and You. It's a Friday morning, 9:12 a.m.
The Church of the Cardinal and You.
Oh, my God. My gosh.
Do we have a second delay button, Brian?
It's those three-word titles. What are we doing
today? The Church, the Cardinal and You is your television program. This is Catholic Community of Faith. Right, okay.
Well, good thing. Can the people see me turning red?
Brian, why don't you start the music over? We'll try this again. And we'll take it from the... It's all yours, Gratz.
And thank you for spending this part of your morning with us. Since we're so awake, we hope you're wide awake, too. Father Greg is going to get one after the show for that one. We are talking this morning about a very important person in the life of the church, Chiara Lubich, who inspired a movement that's 50 years old and inspired a young woman who has recently been beatified, who bore the same name as Chiara Lubich, which is also the name of my eldest daughter, by the way. That's why I don't have any trouble pronouncing that one.
No wonder.
But we want to talk about the influence of this movement on young people. And we've got two young people who are members of Focolare. You're known as the Gen. Is that short for Gente?
Generation.
Generation.
The new generation.
All right. So we've got Adam and Gina. Adam, why don't you tell us how you got connected with the movement? First of all, tell us how old you are.
I'm 24.
24. And you've been involved with Focolare for how long?
For about 24 years now.
Wow. So this is a generational thing in your family, I tell you.
Are your parents involved with Focolare?
Yeah, they are. They've been involved with
Focolare. I thought, what a coincidence.
So. Yeah. Exactly. No, we're here to talk about Chiara Luce Badano, who was a young person of the Focolare as well.
Did you know her?
No, not personally. She passed away in 1990 at the age of 18.
So you were only 3 years old at the time.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Gina, what about yourself? Are you a lifer also?
Yes. I joined when I was 19. I mean, I'm 19 right now, but I joined when I was basically, I was born into it.
Again, with your mom and dad.
Yes, and my grandparents were involved in it too.
And is that typical that the children of members stay involved, or do you see situations like the stereotypical preacher's kid who turns and goes the other way?
I think sometimes that happens, but most of the time people stay with it. I think it's something that they involve into their lives, and they really enjoy being a part of.
Maybe, Adam, a question for our listeners, and that is, when mom and dad are involved with Focolare, I'm assuming dad has a regular job, my mom might be working, you know, you went to a grammar school, high school, so were meetings like weekly or twice a week? When did the Focolare gather where you got so immersed in the whole Focolare movement?
Well, in the United States, it's a little bit spread out, so we don't meet as often as we'd like to. In different parts of the world, they do try to meet weekly or even bi-weekly.
But is there like a Chicago chapter that meets?
There is, yeah. We've been meeting, I guess, now for about a year, year and a half, weekly. And before that, it was maybe monthly or something like that.
Because I know you live out in the Rockford area.
I do.
And Gina, you're in Des Plaines. So
yes.
Did the both of you know each other in the last year and a half?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay, it's interesting. Well, tell us something about Blessed Chiara Luce.
Well, as you said, she was beatified last September, and we wanted to get the word out on her. So this April 9th, on Saturday, April 9th, at around 5 p.m. at the North Riverside Village Hall, we're going to be putting on a demonstration and an event for the youth of the Chicago Diocese.
Now, Gina, what do you mean by Adam talking about put on a demonstration?
We have a bunch of skits and just basically telling the life and the story of Chiara Luce.
That's very interesting. Yes. And how many young people are part of Focolare that you're aware of in this area? In this area, like in your chapter in the Chicagoland area? 10, 20, 30?
More than that.
Yeah, I'd say probably around 50 or 60.
Okay.
Around in the Chicago
now, are you
area.
Both part of the skits coming up on Saturday evening?
Yes, I am.
You are, Gina?
Yes.
Are you a little an actress? A
yes.
budding actress?
I play a news anchor, so I'm really excited about that.
That is tremendous. So then, now if people wanted to learn more information about the event Saturday, give us a phone number or a web.
Yep, the phone number you can call is 773-285-2746.
That number once again.
773-285-2746.
Is there a web to go to?
Yes, midwest.focolare.us.
One more time.
midwest.focolare, which is F-O-C-O-L-A-R-E. US.
And Gina, give us a little bit about her background, her life. Don't give us a skit, just give us a little bit of background.
Okay. Well, she was diagnosed with cancer, I believe it was bone cancer, when she was around 18 years old, and she died when she was 18. But during her suffering, she offered it up to God and was just really accepting of her death, and she even stopped the cancer. And a lot of people think, like, oh, to be a saint, you have to be really religious and all this stuff, but she rarely talked about her religion, although she practiced, and she just really showed that she loved God, and
she lived a very holy life, though.
She did.
And she was born in...
In Italy.
In Italy, and of course died in Italy at the age of 18.
Yes.
What's the miracle attributed to her for the beatification?
There was a young boy in the south of Italy who actually contracted a really rare disease, incurable, they thought. And in a matter of, I think it was a matter of days, he actually was cured from the disease, and it was attributed to Chiara Luce Badano.
Mm. Pope Benedict XVI says this about... Chiara, only love with a capital L can bring true happiness. This is shown by Chiara Badano. Despite her suffering, she was a ray of light, as her nickname suggests, clear light. Very interesting. How about a break time, Graz?
We're going to go to a break, and we invite you to stay with us, because when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation and give you some more information about a couple of upcoming presentations at DePaul University. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
Tour rooms of antique mechanical curiosities from Victrolas to steam engines at the magical San Filippo Estate Saturday, May 21st at Catholic Charities Hearts for Homeless Families fundraiser. The dazzling event benefits programs that help the homeless in Northwest Cook County. The ticket price of $175 per person includes an extensive tour, elegant dinner, and lively auction emceed by radio personality Gary Meyer. For more information, visit catholiccharities.net/hearts or call 847-376-2118.
The Catholic New World has been your faith resource for well over a century. Archbishop Patrick Feehan recognized the need for a strong Catholic voice in 1892 and launched Chicago's first Catholic newspaper. Bishop Feehan named our Catholic newspaper using a theme from the Columbian Exposition, the New World that gave people hope for a brighter future. Today, the Catholic New World is better than ever. It's a rich and diverse resource for Chicagoland Catholics with stories of faith, hope, and inspiration. Cardinal Francis George and our team of columnists offer compelling insights on spirituality, catechesis, and evangelization. Visit our website at catholicnewworld.com. View our photo gallery, catch up on the latest news, and while you're there, subscribe to the Catholic New World or call 312-534-7777. Our look has changed, but we are still your faith resource. Subscribe now to the Catholic New World.
This Lenten season, join millions of Catholics throughout the U.S. in a 30-year tradition within the Catholic Church. Catholic Relief Service's Operation Rice Bowl program. Lent isn't just about giving something up, it's also about doing something positive. Operation Rice Bowl provides a way to embrace traditional themes of Lent through praying with others, fasting, and giving alms while learning about our global community. Celebrate the holy season of Lent by becoming a part of the Operation Rice Bowl community today. Visit www.crs.org to learn more.
Welcome back to Catholic Community of Faith on this Friday morning. We thank you for spending this part of your morning with us. I'm Graziano Marcheschi, co-hosting with the anchor, the one and only Father Greg Sakowicz. We're talking today about all things related to the Focolare movement, especially a young woman who was inspired by the movement and has recently been raised up by Mother Church as one of her blesseds, a young woman by the name of Chiara Luce Padano.
You say that so beautifully.
There's a lot of Chiaras here. There's Chiara Lubick. There's this young woman.
Your daughter.
The current president of the whole Focolare movement is another Chiara. So, but we're talking today with Tom Masters, who recently wrote a book about the Focolare movement entitled Focolare, Living a Spirituality of Unity in the United States.
It only came out 2 weeks ago, Greg.
2 weeks ago. And let me just read a little bit from the endorsement quote on the back cover by Father James Martin, a Jesuit who wrote a bestseller called My Life with the Saints. He says, "The Focolare movement has brought the gospel alive for millions across the world, but it's still somewhat better known in Europe than it is in the U.S. Now this marvelous new book shares the captivating stories of a variety of Americans whose lives have been transformed by an encounter with Christ. This is an inviting, inspiring, and invaluable introduction to one of the great new adventures in the church today." That's a pretty hearty endorsement there, Tom.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's outstanding. When did you start writing this book?
We started a year ago last May. Amy Ullman of Fordham University and I. And like a lot of things in the Focolare, this book came out of not like one single person's idea, but it's an expression of the community. So first we talked about this with our editorial board, and then talked about it with the directors of the Focolare around the United States and Canada and in Australia too, and little by little we came to see how to do this kind of a story, how to do this kind of a book. And really, like you could hear in my description of the Focolare, it's hard to describe what the Focolare does without telling people's stories. So what this book really does is it's based on the collected experience of of the 50 years in the United States. The Focolare itself is a little bit older than that. It goes back to actually to 1939. But by looking at the experience of the founder, Carol Lubick, but then the experience of these people, like the first chapter of this book has portraits of six of these young people, three young women, three young men, and they're little vignettes from their lives and shows how do people live this? What does it do to their lives? And then as the book is organized, it explains the kind of the structure and spirituality of this Focolare, but it also explains about how the Focolare addresses fundamental values in American culture.
Tom, if someone wanted to get a copy of the book, how can they get a copy?
You could go to our website, which is newcitypress.com, and order it there.
www.newcitypress.com. Okay, and the name of the book again is Focolare, Living a Spirituality of Unity in the United States by Tom Masters, and it's literally brand new, off the press.
Absolutely.
Gina and Adam, you know, I'm looking at you two very young people, faith-filled. Gina, what keeps you in the Focolare movement?
I love the people in it, and it's just such a sense of family and community, and just knowing that everyone is living the gospel out in their own communities, like, inspires me to do the same, especially in a college setting. There's so many temptations and so many new things that may not be good, and it just helps me to keep my morals strong and to know that it helps me because I know that everyone else is trying to live the same way.
How about you, Adam?
And it goes in that same mode there. I think that collective spirituality of going to God together keeps God at the center of our life, and having those people around you to help keep you there helps me.
Now, in addition to this event, this happening on April the 9th, multimedia, drama, music, fun, for young people, that's going to be April the 9th, North Riverside Village Hall, 2401 South Des Plaines Avenue in North Riverside. There's also going to be another event that will be held at DePaul University on April 11th. And that's when the international president of Focolare, Maria Voce, will be speaking. Tom, tell us a little bit about that event. Who's bringing her, and what will Maria Voce be talking about?
Well, because this is the 50th anniversary of the movement in North America, Maria Voce, who's been in Canada, she was up in Toronto and Montreal for the last 2 weeks. She's in New York now. There'll be a series of events in New York and in Washington, D.C., and then she'll come to Chicago. And there is a number of things going on with interreligious dialogue, with the young people, like what Adam and Gina have talked about. Things with the Focolare community itself, but DePaul University each year, its Department of World Catholicism and Intercultural Theology, or its center, I should call it, it's not a department, they put on something every April called World Catholicism Week, and this year one of the topics is going to be Trinitarian theology. So how do people know who God is as Trinity in their experience, in their life? And, of course, this is central to the thought of Chiara Lubick. So Maria Voce, who is the successor of Chiara Lubick as president of the Focolare movement, while she's here, is going to give a lecture on that topic, on the spirituality and Trinitarian theology in the life and thought of Chiara Lubick. That'll be at DePaul University, April 11th, 7 p.m., in the Student Center right there at Belden in Sheffield.
That's terrific. In the last couple of minutes, for Adam and for Gina, can you talk a little about it. How has the Focolare movement touched and changed your life? I mean, Adam and Gina, you said that you actually were born into the Focolare movement through mom and dad. And you go through your grammar school years, your high school years. Right now, Gina, you are in college, and I think, Adam, you are out of college now?
Yes.
And you're being 24 years old. And what difference has the Focolare movement made right now? You talk about community. You talk about being gospel-centered. But say a little bit more about that, Adam, in your own life.
I mean, growing up, you have so many different pulls around you from the media, just social, in, like you said, in school, growing up. And having that spirituality to help you stay on track, and those people that you can look to as examples, like Chiara Luce Badano, to keep you going forward, helps you not pay attention to all those different poles and all those different directions, and has kept God as the center of my life.
When you folks come together as the gen within the movement, what's a typical gathering like?
Typically what we do, at least in Chicago, we get together, we have a dinner, and just kind of...
Where's that dinner held?
At the Men's Folklore House in Berwyn.
Okay, in Berwyn, okay.
Yes.
Now, Gina, are you... Now, is there a separate women's gen group, or do you come together?
There is. It's in Hyde Park.
In Hyde Park.
Mm-hmm.
So then you're in college at University of Illinois right now down at Champaign.
Mm-hmm.
So you will come in from Champaign to Hyde Park?
We actually stay in contact by having weekly conference calls.
Wow.
Because everyone's so far spread out. So once a week we gather and we just share experiences or just talk to each other on Sundays.
It's really amazing. You work hard at keeping community.
Yes, definitely.
Metairie might be located. Well, we need to bring this first half to a close. Maybe, Tom, before we close, give a web that people can learn more about the Folklore movement. And again, one more time, where people can pick up your brand new book.
There are two websites. Both have the name Folklore, and the one is folklore.us, which is the North American Folklore website. And then there's folklore.org, which is the international website, which is in many languages. You can click on the language you want to read
and
it in.
And Folklore is F-O-C-O-L-A-R-E.
That's correct.
Thank you, Gratz. Well, I want to thank in a very special way Tom Masters, co-author of Folklore, Living a Spirituality of Unity in the United States. I also want to thank in a very special way Adam Kelly and Gina Citron for being also part of the program this morning. Our phone number, 312-255-8408. Stay with us. We'll be back right after a break, and do not touch that dial.
You're invited to watch The Church, the Cardinal, and You this weekend on cable television. Here's host Graziano Marcheschi.
Lent begins as ashes are applied in the shape of a cross to the foreheads of Catholics. We'll talk with Cardinal George about this solemn season. Do you want to see Michelangelo's famous Pietà without traveling to Rome? We'll show you how to experience the next best thing. And Chicago's Father Augustus Toten is a step closer to sainthood.
For several interesting stories about the Archdiocese, please watch The Church, the Cardinal, and You this weekend on cable television. Go to www.archchicago.org and click on Radio TV for the time and cable channel in your area. That's www.archchicago.org. The Church, the Cardinal, and You. Compelling television about your Archdiocese.
Catholic teens and young adults are preparing for World Youth Day 2011 in Madrid, Spain. The Archdiocese is sponsoring an exciting and inspirational 9-day trip for this coming August.
World Youth Day is a week-long spiritual journey during which teens and young adults from around the world unite to share their faith.
The Archdiocese organized trip to Madrid will include daily mass, catechesis, festivals, walking tours, and all the events scheduled with the Holy Father Pope Benedict the 16th.
That includes a welcoming ceremony, an evening candlelight vigil, and the closing mass. And for young people not going to Madrid, there's a wonderful World Youth Day celebration planned at Our Lady of Guadalupe Shrine in Des Plaines.
The regional event will bring together young Catholics from Illinois, Indiana, and Wisconsin. There will even be a giant TV hookup so you can pray along with the Pope during the closing mass in Madrid.
Go to the Archdiocese website, www.archchicago.org, and click on World Youth Day. You'll find information regarding travel to Madrid, our local festivities, and a link to the official World Youth Day website.
Plan now. Be part of this inspirational and memorable celebration of our faith.
World Youth Day 2011.
You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Every Monday through Friday from 9 to 10 a.m., the Archdiocese of Chicago presents programming about the people, the issues, and the faith that affect all our lives. Thanks for staying with us here on Relevant Radio 950 a.m. Now again, the Catholic Community of Faith.
Welcome back to Catholic Community of Faith on Relevant Radio 950 AM. The time is exactly 9:35 on this cold Friday morning on the Feast of the Annunciation here in Chicago. Our phone number, 312-255-8408, 312-255-8408, and it is Relevant Radio 950. And we're waiting for our phone hookup through our engineer, Brian. We're going to be speaking with Graham Ward all the way over in Manchester in England. And Brian, you may have to put another quarter
Manchester,
in the telephone.
England.
And the thing is, it was interesting when we had the three guests the first half hour, is I was really impressed with both Adam and Gina, two young people truly living their faith. And when Gina talked about, you know, in a college atmosphere, there are so many temptations that hit and to try on different things. She said, no, you hold to your faith. And I think to be in today's world, a man or woman of faith in Jesus, not only to talk about it, but to live it, it is hard.
You know, the late Pope John Paul II was very fond of saying, do not be afraid. And in the flyer that they had for this April 9th event, I think.
It's coming up on Saturday evening.
The celebration of young Chiara Luce. There was a quote from John Paul II that said, young people, do not be afraid to be holy. And I think oftentimes within the church, we sell young people short, you know, and we don't expect them to rise to that level. We expect too little from them, and so we get very little. But more visionary people like John Paul II could see with the Lord's eyes and see that young people are capable of very heroic things. And I think that's one reason why the current Holy Father was interested in beatifying somebody like Chiara Luce, an 18-year-old girl who did rise to the level of great sanctity, not by, you know, going off and preaching to the pagans in some, you know, faraway place, not even by being martyred, but by living a normal Christian life, mm-hmm. but living it with great faith and living it with great charity.
See, I think sometimes, Gratz, we forget there are many saints in our midst today. They may not be officially canonized by the Roman Catholic Church, but not yet. But I remember as a boy, you know, growing up in Park Ridge and in grammar school and high school, dealing with many holy men and women. And if anyone wants to even give us a call about that, 312-255-8408, have you lived or in your neighborhood dealt with people who are truly holy and reflecting the presence of God? I think one of my all-time favorite lines comes from St. Francis of Assisi, who once said, preach the gospel at all times. If necessary, use words.
Yeah.
Preach the gospel at all times. If necessary, use words.
And we've all had people like that in our lives. You know, sometimes we have to really stop and think about it to remember them, and oftentimes they're just very obvious. But that's a great question, Greg. If you've got someone out there who's really touched your life, who's been a holy person, who's been a witness of God's presence in your life, give us a call, 312-255-8408, and tell us about them. Because this young girl, Chiara Luce, is not unique. There are many other people like her, and some of them have touched your life and they've touched my life.
And also, Gottfried, remember that we think of saintly people, of course, holy, but they're not perfect. In fact, it has been said before that many of your greatest saints were very hard to live with.
Yeah.
I think it's true. so that, you know, saintly people, we're not dealing with people without sin. They are sinners, but somehow they held the faith, and there are many saints in our midst today. And, you know, when you and I were growing up, because we're about the same age, you got me by a couple of years, you know, I think our parents thought that raising children then was hard, and it was. But look at the world today. So many more distractions.
Oh, yeah.
The whole world of the internet. And I think that being a parent today, it might be harder today than any time in the history of our country. We're going to go to a break here on Catholic Community Faith and Relevant Radio 950. I'm Father Greg Sackwitz along with Grazia Marcheschi. The time is 940. Our phone number, 312-255-8408. Stay with us. We'll be back right after a break.
Choosing an elementary school for your child is one of the biggest decisions you will ever make to shape your child's future. So why pick a Catholic school?
I want my kids to learn more than the three R's. They need a faith-based education so they make good decisions.
I want my son and daughter to go to college. At Catholic schools, attendance and graduation rates are nearly 100%. And when these kids graduate, they go to college.
My teacher is so cool. She knows who I am. She helps me when I have trouble figuring things out.
My son is in the number. The student-teacher ratio is 18 to 1, and Catholic school teachers are really dedicated.
I want my daughter to feel welcome, to be safe.
The test scores are well above the national average. Look out, college. Here they come.
Go to www.archchicago.org and click on Schools to learn more about the great benefits of a Catholic education. Invest in your child's future. Make your child a winner for life.
Cardinal George directs the catechetical activities of the Archdiocese of Chicago through the Office for Catechesis and Youth Ministry. Our office promotes lifelong catechesis by directing certification and formative opportunities for those who teach catechesis in the more than 350 parishes that make up the Archdiocese.
Each year we host a myriad of opportunities to enhance adult faith formation and youth ministry programs. We sponsor certification classes, guest speakers, youth rallies, retreats, and our well-attended annual Chicago Catechetical Conference.
We work closely with pastors to ensure that their congregations and staffs are well-formed in teaching and learning about the Catholic faith. Our highly skilled coordinators serve various ethnic groups, speak multiple languages, and are always ready to serve Christ through catechesis.
Log on to www.catechesis-chicago.org or www.youthministry-chicago.org to learn more about how we can better serve you.
If you haven't read the Catholic New World lately, you're in for quite a surprise. It's bigger, bolder, and better than ever before.
The Catholic New World is a rich and diverse resource for Catholics throughout the Archdiocese of Chicago. It carries stories of faith, hope, and inspiration. Our most read column is written by our publisher, Cardinal Francis George, our shepherd, teacher, and leader.
Our columnists provide support in spirituality and evangelization, and you'll want to browse the Around the Archdiocese page, your gateway to Catholic activities throughout Cook and Lake Counties.
Are you constantly on the go? Then stay connected to your church by visiting CatholicNewWorld.com and sign up to follow us on Twitter.
That's CatholicNewWorld.com. View our photo gallery, catch up on the latest news, and if you haven't already, subscribe to the Catholic New World or call 312-534-7777.
Your faith resource. Subscribe now to the Catholic New World.
Welcome back to Catholic Community of Faith on Relevant Radio, 9:50 a.m. Time is exactly 9:45 on this cold Friday morning in Chicago. I'm Father Greg Sack, along with Graziano Marcheschi.
You know, Greg, I was thinking about what you said about those two young people, how they grew up within Focolare. On the one hand, it's remarkable that kids could grow, be born into something, and then adopt it and make it their own. You know, I think the stereotype is that they turn away from it. So I was delighted to see that they really have owned it. But it just made me think about how we all need those kinds of supports. Now, I know parish is meant to be that. You know, the parish is supposed to be our faith community, but we all know that for a lot of people, it doesn't turn out that way. And even if you're very active in the parish, the spiritual dimension of it often gets limited to Sunday. And then the rest of the week, you get involved in committees and planning parties and things of that nature. But something like Focolare, the St. Egidio community, Charismatic Renewal, so many different movements that cropped up in the life of the church in the second half of the 20th century, I think they really support people in ways that are remarkable.
The thing is, and I think I always ask people, especially like at a baptism prep, what was your experience of church growing up as a child? What is your experience now? And what do you want it to be? Well, we do have a phone hookup here. We have Graham Ward. He is the Samuel Ferguson Professor of Philosophical Theology and Ethics at the University of Manchester, way out in England, and is the head of the School of Arts, Histories, and Cultures. And Professor Ward is the author of many theological books. And during World Catholicism Week 2011, to be held at DePaul, he'll be giving a talk entitled Urban Studies in the Mirror of World Catholicism. Graham Ward, welcome finally to Catholic Community Faith, all the way from Manchester in England.
Thank you very much.
I would say good morning to you, but I think it's good afternoon where you are.
It's good afternoon here, and it's a lovely spring afternoon as well.
Oh, I love that British accent.
Lovely spring afternoon.
Well,
it's
not
lovely. To cold Chicago.
Nor spring here.
You're coming to cold Chicago. Well, tell us about your talk entitled Urban Studies in the Mirror of World Catholicism, which will be part of the Center for World Catholicism and Intercultural Theology at DePaul University, which is hosting World Catholicism Week 2011, April 11th to 14th. Tell us something about your upcoming keynote talk.
Well, I've always been fascinated by cities. I grew up within a city. I grew up within the city of Manchester, which is one of the first modern cities, cities that emerged in Britain as a result of the Industrial Revolution. And I really kind of began studying urban studies in relation to theology. In fact, when I first visited America, I remember landing in New Orleans and traveling over the freeway at night towards the city, and then this colossal kind of thing from the distance, all floodlit, kind of straight up out of the flat land. And it was just astonishing. And I remember just thinking, goodness me, what kind of an expression is this of human being and human belonging, and where does God fit into it? So that's where it all began. What I want to talk about, particularly in my keynote, is just the way in which, in the early development of the modern city, most particularly in Britain, it was religious people, it was Christians particularly, who were at the forefront of city development, city improvements to cities as the problems were emerging. And so I want to recapture some of the theological vision, the theological imagination that went into urban planning and is still there in several different respects.
I was intrigued. I saw the description of the talk you're going to present. I was intrigued by the notion of the theological underpinnings of the whole idea of the city. Can you talk about that for a
moment? I mean, and part of those underpinnings are genuinely historical. If you're looking at the nature of the modern city, the post-revolution, industrial revolution city, Take a city like Manchester, for example, which at one point was more important for its wealth generation than London in Britain. Now, the key people who were involved there in building that city, in wanting to make it a beautiful city, who wanted to push for clean streets, wanted to make sure that there was adequate sewage control, all the key people were nonconformists. There were Unitarians, there were Methodists, there were Baptist people. And in all of them, they had a vision behind that for wanting to see something of the kingdom of God actually being built in the environment in which they actually lived. So they were constantly wanting to translate, if you like, the gospel into a civic gospel. And that's why you can look at some of the town halls in Britain, and they actually look like cathedrals, because they were intended to act like cathedrals for the whole of the population.
Graham, talk to us for a minute about city, the sense of city and homelessness.
Well, of course, that is absolutely key, and I don't want to lose sight of that. What you find in a lot of kind of urban studies or a lot of kind of developments of modern architecture is a real utopianism, and in beneath that utopianism, you've got to come to see what are some of the problems of the city, and homelessness is one of those enormous problems. Deprivation, deprived areas. But again, to come back to the rise of the modern city, it was exactly in the face of these problems that these Christians developed the vision for what they wanted to do within the city. So it was no good then trying to create magnificent architecture for their town hall if in fact there was not an adequate sewage system, if there was not actually fresh water being available to every house within that city. So it went hand in hand. Their moral vision went hand in hand with a theological vision as well. So it was never trying to get away from the problems which are always endemic to city living. Homelessness, wealth inequality, they're there. And they remain there. I think what has happened today is we've got less of that moral vision behind cities, and my own kind of experience of being involved in civic planning in Britain, cities are more managed than have a kind of moral vision for what they actually want to be for the people that they house.
Graham, I'm interested in hearing you talk a little bit about the relationship between beauty and the life of the city. Obviously, you know, as you've been pointing out very well for us, there are many competing needs in civic life. Sewage system obviously is not irrelevant. The needs of the homeless. And there are so many pressing needs, so many life and death kinds of needs, that it almost seems to be difficult to make a case for the importance of beauty and to assign economic resources to that.
It poses a problem, particularly when cities are under a great deal of pressure financially at the moment just to keep some of their basic services going. But I would see the beauty of a city as one of the basic services it has to also keep going. Cities are not just utilitarian places. They're places of dwelling. They're places of belonging. They're places where, in fact, people invest significance, invest loyalties. And so it's very important that, in fact, these values are also given expression within the way that cities develop. So from quite early on, however difficult the poverty was in whether it was in Chicago or whether it was in Washington or whether it was in Manchester, creating something of beauty, creating monumental architecture, thinking through the provision of parks and landscaping, that went hand in hand with the moral vision I was speaking of before, because it was seen that it was not just a utilitarian place.
Yes.
That this was a place in which beauty could not just be an enhancement and an ornament, but it creates an environment within which people can sustain some of the more difficult things about living.
I think that's a very helpful perspective. Our outgoing mayor, who's been mayor or king here in Chicago for 22 years, and I think he got his inspiration from European cities. He really made the beautification of Chicago a major priority within his administration. And he succeeded considerably. And I for one, am very grateful for that, for the reasons that you've just articulated.
I don't think you can ever underestimate, take a place like Chicago, you can never underestimate the international nature of the way people come from all over the world to see that fantastic architecture. Now that's a beauty that's been planned, and a beauty which now other people can share who are actually visiting as well. So it doesn't get rid of the problems of urban life.
It was very interesting, Graham, when you talk about Chicago being an international city and well known throughout the world. It still fascinates me. A number of people throughout the world, when they think of Chicago, they think of Al Capone and gangsters, which
all
goes
right,
back to the 20s.
That's interesting. I don't. I think about
thank you.
Being on a boat in the water and going on the architectural tour and being just stunned by some of the kinds of imaginative human conceptions of what buildings could do at a time when, in fact, we didn't even have the engineering to see how we could do those things.
It's remarkable.
Well, the thing
isn't
is, you know, we just have only like a minute left. Everything you're saying, Graham, is outstanding. But how does it translate in the face of tragedy when you look at the situation in Japan? Cities gone. Tokyo, a couple hundred miles away, you know, their drinking water is imperiled. And so, how does everything you're saying translate in the face of tragedy?
Well, I actually think that something like Tokyo gives us an instance of how tragedy does not need to be a defeat. I mean, what I've been really astonished at is the way in which the Japanese people have really launched into clearing up the effects of the tsunami, how they're really looking to reduce the iodine within the water, how they spoke out quite plainly that this was dangerous to drink this water for babies. I just think there's a massive amount of care actually there, and that
I think it was
indomitable spirit of the humor is what the city is all about.
I think it was Hemingway in his acceptance speech for the Nobel Prize who said, "Man can be destroyed but not defeated."
Yes.
And on that note, we need to bring the program to a close. I want to thank in a very special way Graham Ward, who is the Samuel Ferguson Professor of Philosophical Theology and Ethics at the University of Manchester in England, who will be doing a keynote as part of the World Catholicism Week 2011. You can go to the website at www.worldcath2011.depaul.edu. Graham, thank you very much for joining us here on Catholic Community Faith. Have a safe trip to Chicago. I want to thank in a very special way co-host Graziano Marcheschi, and to our producer/engineer, excellent work with Brian Hockey Hitman Brock. To all our listeners, God bless and have a wonderful weekend.
This is Cardinal Francis George. Thank you for being with us this past hour on Relevant Radio 950 AM. Join us every day, Monday through Friday, as the Archdiocese of Chicago presents the Catholic Community of Faith. Have a wonderful day, and God bless you.